They have no weapons. They're citizens in Berlin. What can they do? They turn hatred towards the system. And they start to post little postcards around the city, knowing that if they are ever caught, they will be hung. But they're subversive postcards. They say things like, "The Führer murdered my son, he will murder yours too." Or things like, "The Führer is a liar." Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of postcards all around Berlin, dropped on staircases, left on trains, whatever. And the hunt is on to find out who is producing these subversive messages, that they can be caught and punished. Have you ever imagined what it would be like if our God treated us like that? Can you imagine how dreadful it would be if our God treated us like a hunted animal because we were subversive or selfish, because we did not take his laws seriously, because we did not follow him, take heed of his commands? Can you imagine how awful it would be? We thank God that he's not like that. His promise is something that is so secure, it's just so amazing, it's just so permanent, that no matter how often we drift, no matter how often we even become angry or even plot against him, for make no mistake, we do in very subtle ways, he's always there. He just stands firm. It is an incredible thing, an incredible truth. Jeremiah was a very interesting character. He never felt very comfortable in his role as a prophet. He argued with God a lot. If he had been one of Hitler's henchmen, he wouldn't have lived very long, because he argued with the establishment of heaven. But God's patience with Jeremiah was infinite, and God knew that Jeremiah was the one. Jeremiah lived at a really interesting time in the history of Judah. He was born somewhere around 650 BC. Around the time that he became into adulthood, a new king came onto the throne in Judah. And it was a guy who was called Josiah. And Josiah was a really good king. He was really, really good. The nation was in a terrible mess. It was in a terrible mess because they had drifted for two or three generations away from God. 100 years earlier, there was a guy called Hezekiah on the throne of Judah. And he was a really good king as well. He was a man who tried to redirect people back to honoring God's laws. But he had a son who was a bit of a fool. His son was called Manasseh. And he started to drift away from all of God's laws. And he instituted child sacrifice and worshipped what Jeremiah refers to, I think in chapter 7, the Queen of Heaven. I think she's called Ashtol, a Mesopotamian goddess of fertility and love. That's kind of where the nation was going. This was the stuff they were getting into. And it was really dreadful. And then Manasseh had a son called Amon. And Amon was just as bad. And over these decades of living, it became ingrained in the people that actually, you know, replacing honorable worship with orgies and feasting and sacrificing children, burning them alive on altars to please the gods, became okay. And then Amon died, and his son, who was about 22, 23 years old, I can't remember, but around that mark, Josiah. And Josiah becomes the king of Judah, and he is a good man. He loves his God, and he is distressed at the state of the nation, and begins a process of reform. And it's at this time that Jeremiah starts putting his message out. Jeremiah starts to say, you have to stop this. You see, just because the king came to the throne and said, okay, we're not going to burn children on altars anymore or spill their blood to please our goddesses. We're going to turn back to the God of the Jews. We're going to turn back to the God who is the righteous one God. An edict might force people to behave in a certain way, but even a king's edict can't change the way people think. A government in our generation can say to you, this is what the law says, you will obey it. And you and I have to obey it. But it doesn't mean that we obey it inside. It doesn't mean that we change the way we think about it. And the law was so ingrained that in Jeremiah 17 it says, paraphrase, can't remember exactly. The law is written in with the point of a flint. The sin is written as with a point of flint on the tablets of their hearts. Their sin is written in with an iron point or the point of a flint on their hearts. It is so embedded inside them, the sinfulness of the nation. It had become so normal to live outside the realm of God's will that it was just the default position. Isn't it interesting? Hezekiah, good king. As soon as he gets out of the way and someone else comes, it's so easy for the nation to default to a position which is away from God's will. Look at our own generation. Is it easier for our churches to be swelling with faithful people? Or is that kind of the challenge? Is it easier for our nation to be promiscuous and selfish and greedy and full of lack of forgiveness and self-worth and self-advancement and self-reliance? Which is the default position? To live a life of Christian integrity where through iron will and decision we choose to live in that way and not in that way? Which is the easier decision? It's obvious, isn't it? The easier decision is to do what our flesh wants to do. The easiest decision is to do what we want to do. It's my life. I will live how I want to live. The default, it's like following God from the beginning to the present is like pushing against a spring the wrong way. And as soon as a force like Hezekiah or Josiah, who are pushing into God against worldly mechanisms, as soon as they're out of the way, the spring recoils back to its natural position of selfishness. Or like walking against the tide. Sorry I'm walking up and down here, it's because I'm nervous. Walking against the tide, you know, you push against the flow. What's easier, turn around the other way and go with the river or walk against it? Of course it's easier to go with the river. Of course it's easier to go with the world. You and I and our generation. Let's just all become decadent and hedonistic and just follow whatever we fancy doing whenever we want to do it. Because it's my life. It's interesting, isn't it? The default position of the fallen human state. And God comes along and says, I want you to be something different. Even Jeremiah, the great prophet who is filled with God's Spirit, even he finds it difficult. Even he's not saying, oh, God's chosen me, I'm fully equipped for this task. I know what I'm doing, and I'm going to do this well. Some church leaders do that. They're nuts. Of course he doesn't. He says, who do you think you are calling me? I'm not doing that. I'm a child. And what does God say to Jeremiah? Come on, you know your Bible, some of you. Don't you talk to me like that, is what God says to him. You will do as you're told. You're going to uproot and tear down. You're going to build. You're going to plant. You're going to be my voice in a world that does not want to listen to you. You're going to be my voice amongst a people who will think you're mad. You're going to be my voice in a situation which is just not their default natural place. And this is the world that Jeremiah started to speak into. Josiah was a young man. And do you know what? When he was just 38 years old, he dropped dead. How sad was that? He was a much loved guy. He died. He had spent the 15 years or so of his young reign working really hard to reform the nation of Judah, to pull it away from these dreadful practices back into the rightness of God. In the early days of that reign, because of several decades of just abandonment of all that is God, the law, the scroll, the actual written law of God was lost. And in the early days of Josiah's reign, it was found in the temple. And Jeremiah started to speak into this promise of God, into the law of God, and to call people back again. He was in a great situation, good king, times of reform, and then suddenly Josiah dies. And the 15 years or so of good kingship were not enough to change the mindset of the people. He could decree that they behave in a certain way, but you don't change the way people think just like that. There are certain aspects of Methodism I've been battling with for the last 27 years of ministry. I can't budge it. I cannot move it. It takes a long time for people's mindset to shift. And even Josiah, the king of Judah, it wasn't enough. Josiah died. And Jeremiah's message becomes very, very potent indeed. Your sins will find you out. You are not listening to what has to happen. There is a consequence of living in this default position of sin. And Jeremiah goes on to explain about a great army from the north that's going to come down. And that army does come down, and that is the Babylonian army. And the Babylonian army in the 6th century drag the people off into exile. And Jeremiah is saying, look, there is a consequence of your sin. It is the judgment that comes with not living in the right way will unfold. And the same is true for us today as we come together on our Covenant Sunday. We make a choice. Nobody ever said that following Jesus was easy. In fact, if we follow Jesus, our life becomes somewhat complex. It becomes inconvenient. It means we have to start thinking things and doing things in an unnatural way, in a way that is against our default position of selfishness and worldly ways. But if we don't do that, if we follow the default position of a fallen world, it ends in death and destruction and judgment. It's the same in the Old Testament. It's the same in the New Testament. It's the same now. We choose. We make our choice. Jeremiah worked so hard, and the people chose the wrong way. They end up, the consequence is their captivity. And do you know what? God's covenant deal still stands. Even then, a deal is a deal. God doesn't turn to them and say, I told you, I told you, look what you've done, I wash my hands with you, of you. I told you not to live like that. I told you, don't ever talk to me again. Which is what human beings do to each other. God, his response is that there is a consequence to your sin, and this is the consequence. It is destruction. And you are damaging yourselves. But there is hope because my covenant stands firm. My covenant will never, ever, ever, ever break. And Jeremiah then starts to say in Jeremiah 31, chapter 31, verse 31, 31, 31, there is coming a time when my law will be written not on parchment but in their hearts. My law is going to be written in their minds. Nobody's going to look at one another and say, know the Lord, because they will all know the Lord. There is a time coming when, effectively what he's saying is, there's a time coming when our very DNA will run with the presence of God. That we won't have to talk to each other about knowing or not knowing God's way, because it's going to happen. This is a future time, a time that is not yet unfolded. But it's also a pointing towards the coming of Jesus, because else at around the same time in Jeremiah, there is the prophecy of the one from David's line who will come to be a servant of the people and bring peace, a heavenly peace. And we have just celebrated Christmas, the coming of Jesus. Isn't it amazing that even through the journey of the Judean people, even through the ministry of Jeremiah, there is a jugular vein running through of God's faithfulness. And we stand here today, just prior to taking Holy Communion together, acknowledging that that very same covenant has still not broken. It never did break. It never has done. The remnant did return from Babylon. You know the story. Nehemiah came and rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem and the temple, all Ezra and all that stuff. But the rebuild, the replanting, the reemergence, the rising from the ashes. Because when we are with our God, he always wins. And I don't know, as I'll draw this to a close, I don't know where you're at as you sit here today. Some of you will be very committed to Jesus Christ. And today is a fantastic opportunity for us to say the prayer together and recommit. Some of you are not really committed, or you don't know if you're committed, or you're not sure if you've ever kind of said a prayer. I want you to, if you want to do it, I want you to see the recommitment prayer as a first commitment prayer. As a sort of, I've never really computed this or joined the dots before, but I want to say this. I want to step into God's will for my life. And it applies whether this day is a joyful day for you or whether this day is filled with grief. Whether this season in your life is one of real hope and happiness or whether this season in your life is so gloomy you just do not know how you're going to get through till tomorrow. Exactly the same covenant applies. Exactly the same. Because we are not promised freedom from struggle. Jeremiah witnessed the exile of the people into Babylonian captivity. Jeremiah went through great pain as he proclaimed his prophetic message to a world that didn't want to hear. They put him in the stocks, they tried to drown him in a cistern, they did all sorts of stuff to him to shut him up, because the world didn't want to hear about this God. And do you know what? It's the same today. We don't get put in the village stocks and have stuff thrown at us. Might have done 100 years ago. We don't get put in cisterns in the ground, in the mud, and left to drown. But we are still faced with the opposition of the world around us. And God wants people who will stand firm He wants a church that will stand firm in his word, in the authority of his word, and in the assurance and the certainty of his presence. And that is the call to us. Don't try and work it out. Christmas morning, I said to the congregation, do not try and understand this. You will die trying. You will die trying, believe me. But rather, we believe in order that we might begin to understand, in the words of Anselm. We don't understand first in order that we might believe. That's just hiding to nothing, that is. We step into it. Jeremiah didn't want this task. He stepped into God's will. We step into God's will. Mary stepped into God's will as she bore Jesus. Jesus was God's will made flesh. We step into Jesus. Choose. Choose. Let's choose as we make our covenant prayer together. You don't have to do this. Do you know our God is so gentle? And he says to us, if you want to follow the road to sorrow and loss and death, I'm not going to stop you. But if you want to make a decision to give your life to me, that I could put you to what I will, that I will rank you with whom I will, I might put you to suffering. I might put you to being exalted high or very low. It's of no matter to you because you are not yours. You are mine. That is a massive promise. It is a promise that is so great we cannot take it lightly. And it is a promise that is so wonderful. We move into a realm of living, past, present, and future, where nothing that this world affords can satisfy us, but nothing that this world has can destroy us either. Because we are his. I know where I stand, and there ain't nothing ever going to change it. So let's make a choice. Will you say that prayer today? Either for the first time, or a renewal of where you're already at. God is so good. His covenant stands forever. Let's sing together our prayerful, a prayer.